Hello and welcome to our first podcast at Brookhill United Methodist Church. My name is Reverend Kathy Altman. I'm the associate pastor here and I will be your host for today. We are featuring different ministries that we support, and today I have the opportunity to speak with representatives from an organization known as Bikes for the World. This group provides used bicycles to those around the world in need of this form of transportation. We fully don't understand how valuable it is to have a working bicycle in some remote areas, and so I invited both Taylor Jones and Yvette Hess to join me today as they talk about this particular area of their work and how it affects and assists others around the world. Here at Brookhill, we will be hosting a bicycle collection in March, and you will hear more about that as well. And so without further ado, I welcome both Taylor Jones and Yvette Hess from Bikes for the World. Brief intro, I just kind of wanted you all to give me a little bit of an understanding of, I don't know how long you've been with the company and whether or not how long it's been in existence, all of those things. So if you could just give me a little bit of a history of Bikes for the World and your connection to it.
Yvette, do you want to jump in since you have longer history than me?
I can try to. So Bikes for the World has been around since 2005. Before that time, it was operating under another organization. So it's actually been around longer than that. Mm-hmm. And some of our partners have been with us through that transition. I came on in, I think, 2010, maybe. So it's been 13 years since I've been with the organization. I started part-time for a few years and then eventually came on full-time. I used to work in television and I was working both jobs for a while. I took a vacation to the Philippines and I got to visit with one of our newest partners at the time in the Philippines. And I was like, man, how do I do this like full time? So I came back from that, quit my job and started with Bikes for the World.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you. And I have so enjoyed working with you at other places as we do these bike collections. Taylor, how about you? How did you get started with Bikes for the World? And
so my first involvement was, I think, either 2008 or 2009 as a volunteer. And I'd also, but around that time or during that time, Bikes for the World was working with the city of Rockville on a youth bike program. And that was something that was interesting to me. And at that time, I, you know, was just kind of interested in that and had connected with the organization originally in regards to, you know, my interest in seeing if I could help out there. And then, I mean, fast forward, I guess, like 3 or 4 years, like 2014, I was hired. And since then, I've had a lot of different roles with the organization, all of the jobs except for Yvette's, because her job is above my skill level. And now, yeah, so now I'm the executive director. So I've been here for, well, I guess, what, 7 years, 8 years, something like that, in a number of different capacities. So,
gotcha. Yvette, what is your title? Yeah.
Outreach coordinator.
Okay. Yep. So, Taylor, you mentioned that Bikes for the World began as a youth bike program with the city of Rockville. What was that all about?
It didn't begin as one. I mean, that was one of the it was called the Rockville Youth Bike Project, and it was something that Bikes for the World had a contract with the city of Rockville to do. You know, hands-on youth education and learn to ride classes.
Oh, okay.
In some of the schools in Rockville. So, but I mean, that ended what, 2013, 14?
Maybe, yeah, somewhere around there. I'd say at least 5 years.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, obviously, like, primarily our mission is primarily international in focus. I mean, obviously, you know, community partnerships or community programs like that are really important to us because we're a small organization. Yvette and I are 2/3 of the full-time staff. We have one part-time staff as well. So, you know, a lot of what we do is it's volunteer and community driven.
Okay.
You know, so if there are, so obviously it's like working with, you know, working with volunteers, whether it's in the form of like a collection, like y'all are going to be hosting, or, you know, working with school groups, individual volunteers, other civic organizations, churches, synagogues, mosques, scout troops, whatever, you know, that aspect of it is huge for us in a couple different, obviously, like we couldn't achieve what we do with the volume that we do without volunteer help, because we're small staff. But also, you know, part of our mission is to provide, you know, meaningful volunteer opportunities for people in the community. And also as a way, you know, I think if we can use those volunteer opportunities as a way for people to learn, especially for kids, like to learn, to work, have an opportunity to work with their hands, to work with their peers, to, you know, have some kind of like peer-to-peer learning. That's huge, especially like reflecting on the past couple of years, and Yvette can speak to it probably more succinctly than me, just because she has more direct and regular contact with a lot of the, you know, the volunteers, community groups that we're working with. But I think that, you know, reflecting on the impact of COVID and kind of what we lost in 2020, you know, I think that having like that energy that we missed out on for, you know, for a long time, almost a year or 8 months, whatever, of not having volunteers here and not, you know, having that opportunity to work with other people, I think was something that we really missed. And it reinforced for me that like, that's a big part of what we do and something we've been successful in doing. And, you know, from an organizational perspective, like it's hard to put, like you can't put a dollar sign on it and say, you know, that sort of interaction has X quantitative value for Bikes for the World, but it's something that like we know, like intrinsically we know, and there are things we can point to, you know, to kind of be able to underscore the importance and centrality of that in our work.
I guess some of the things that I've noticed, particularly with folks who come to donate and things like that, they had never even considered that something that they considered to be excess, something they no longer use, they don't need it anymore, just weren't sure what to do with it, could be something so vital to someone else across the world. And there's something special about bringing that kind of meaning to something that we considered to be excess, you know, something that we really didn't need. And it just has touched so many folks. And one thing I find too, I mean, obviously at every collection, we offer tax, you know, forms for your taxes so that you can write it off as a donation. A lot of folks don't even want it. They're like, no, that's fine. You know, we just wanted to give back. And it's awesome. And then for those who actually process those bikes, yep, it takes muscle and a lot of hammers and a lot of WD-40. But I tell you, there's something meaningful about, you know, putting your hand to the plow, basically, and doing the work that's needed, that's going to mean so much. And, you know, I don't know, that's part of why I got involved with Bikes for the World. And I found out about it at, in the United Methodist Church, we have something called annual conferences. And there was a presentation that was just a video that was shown at an annual conference. And when I found out it was a local company in Rockville, right in our backyard, I'm like, okay, we got to look a little further here. At which point, at some point, I connected with Yvette and her team, and we started the journey. So, but Yvette, Taylor had said something about you speaking more to the background of Bikes for the World, but really, I wanted to kind of get both of your perspective on, you know, how has working with Bikes for the World affected you, personally, professionally? What kind of, I don't know, you guys all avid bikers or something? Is that why, where, how you got, you know, I mean?
I mean, that's how I got involved, is certainly I have a love of bikes. When I was working in television, I was actually writing for the website. So I was covering a lot of bike stories. So I was pretty immersed in the cycling community. I was attending meetings and like how bike lanes were getting created. Mm-hmm. It was really kind of at the boom of when all of that was happening. The internet was really kind of taking off, and so was cycling facilities in the area. So I kind of connected the two things that I loved the most. And the more I got involved with the cycling community, the more I wanted to be involved. So that's, you know, that's kind of how I made the jump over. What I take away most from my job is what you were just saying, was that connection with the community. You know, it's great what we're doing overseas, but for me, I love working with our community here locally, working with the kids, you know, connecting them to something that maybe they weren't involved in before. There's a lot of kids that have to do volunteer hours, and they aren't really connected to some of the organizations that they're getting the hours with. When they come in and, you know, they're getting greasy and putting wrenches in their hands, there's like Taylor was saying, there's an energy that comes with that. And I really feed off of that. And, you know, sometimes the kids don't know how to use wrenches properly, and seeing that connection, or, you know, when they figure out that leverage can really help them accomplish something that they thought they couldn't do before. Mm-hmm. It's really neat to see that click with them. And also to see their connection with doing something bigger than themselves, their family, their community, to actually see, you know, through social media, these bikes arriving in another country, mm-hmm. and who they're helping, and they had something to do with that, is that's pretty neat.
Yeah. At the last event that I hosted with you all, one woman came and brought 10 bicycles because her four kids had outgrown their bikes at least twice. And so she had all of these children's bikes and things like that. And the kids' eyes just lit up when they realized that they're still going to be able to, that bike is still going to be able to use by another child somewhere else.
Yeah.
And it just meant so much to them. So Taylor, how about you? How has working for Bikes for the World affected you personally, professionally?
Yeah, I mean, to your other question of like, you know, is this something that we both got into because we're people who ride bikes? I mean, yes, for sure. I mean, I feel like now I'm like the bike guy, like not what I intended to do, like not what I did not go to grad school for nonprofit management. I didn't grow up. I wasn't a kid. Like, I can't wait to work in nonprofits and run nonprofits. I mean, I'm someone who, I grew up overseas, and then when I moved back to the US, didn't really know anyone. And my mom, I asked my mom to get me a mountain bike. So I was just I was just riding every day after school, mm-hmm. started hanging out at the local bike shop. And, you know, eventually those guys said, hey, you know, like we can teach you stuff. Like if you want a job, you know, we can teach you how to work on bikes, and you can make contribution aside from just hanging out here and taking up space. So, I mean, honestly, ever since then, it's like, I've always worked in the bike realm, you know, working mm-hmm. bike shops, set up and run bike share programs, you know, race bikes, run race teams, organize races, you know, like all that kind of stuff, like everything under the sun. And so when, you know, there was an opportunity to kind of connect the things that were really interesting to me, you know, like riding a bike, which is like fundamentally one of the easiest things that, you know, you can do, but it can have so many positive impacts, both on the environment, on your physical health, on your mental mm-hmm. health. You know, I think being on a bike, it totally changes the way that you interact with and see the community around you. And I think that's huge. So, you know, when there was the opportunity to connect that with what I was interested in, like academically, professionally, looking at like international development and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. It really was just like a logical connection for me. And I think that, you know, maybe it's a little bit, I think I've arrived at a similar perspective as a vet, but I think I probably started on the other end of the spectrum, like being more interested in the international program impact.
Okay.
Which I still think is huge. And like, it is something that really interests me. And you know, now there's such a big focus on non-motorized transport, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, better infrastructure for pedestrians or people riding bikes. And in a lot of places in the developing world, especially, it's about looking at it from like a public health perspective, an environmental perspective, you know, like the prevalence of scooters and motorcycles, all these things that have like two-stroke engines, the pollution from those is horrendous. It's a thousand times worse than a car. So, you know, it's like, if you can get people using bikes, like it's better from a public health perspective. It's better from an environmental impact perspective. And from, especially in low-income communities, it's a more impactful thing because it's a low-cost option that is, it's still a durable good, mm-hmm. you know, and long-term, like you might have maintenance on a bike, but comparatively speaking, it's going to be less than maintenance on a motor vehicle, scooter, whatever. So, you know, being able to connect like those two perspectives and what we're doing at Bikes for the World, like that international side of it and the program impact is something that is still really interesting to me. But I think the thing that I really do enjoy here is, yeah, working with folks, especially like providing kids specifically, like whether it's at a collection or here in the warehouse, like hands-on opportunity to learn and work with their hands and, you know, teach each other like problem solving. I think that's huge because in a world where things are more like technology based and kids mm-hmm. are spending more time looking at screens, you know, there's not like those sort of hands-on learning opportunities for a lot of kids. It's not something that they have access to in school, that it's not part of the curriculum. So, you know, if we can provide an opportunity for that, like, I don't have any illusion that these kids are going to go down the same like career path that I have, but you know, they're transferable skills, right? It's mm-hmm. like problem solving, working alongside someone else, and also building self-confidence that, hey, here is a problem, as it were. Here is like all the tools you need to solve this problem. And then we're going to help you figure out how to do it. I think that's huge too, because there's no pressure, right? Like I tell volunteers, there's no quota, like there's no quota of productivity here. You're not going to break anything. As long as we learn and no one gets hurt because we're working smart, success, in my opinion.
Well, so, I think too, with a lot of our young people, just learning how to swing a hammer, how to use a wrench, you know, how to, you know, those kinds of things. And, oh, wow, a can of WD-40 can do that. All right. That's great. You know, so you know, just to kind of see that and, you know, just basic home maintenance, you're going to be required to swing a hammer at some point, you know? So you're right. Those skills are transferable. And like you said, the team building skills, the problem solving skills, all that is so effective in the workplace. So plus, you know, quite honestly, it gets these kids outside, you know, and doing something to give back. So I think there's a lot to it. Let me just ask you, when folks volunteer, is there an age that you recommend not going below, or, you know,
nope.
Anybody that wants to come and swing a hammer or something, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we ask if they're really young, that maybe a parent comes with them, but okay. I mean, we've worked with kids as young as 4.
Okay.
And successfully, you know, we did a collection with a pre-kindergarten class. They paired the kids up with a, like a fifth grade class or something, and they worked together. The only person that got hurt there was parent.
Okay.
So, and it was, that was a really neat experience because those kids actually went to a recycling center and saw a pile of bikes that were ours. And they asked the teacher about it and wanted to know, you know, what happened to them. And they traced it back to us. They came and visited us in the warehouse. They brought the kids. They helped us load a container. You know, the wheels they were carrying were as big as they were. but, you know, then they ended up doing a collection and they learned about us and they gave a presentation to the entire class. And so, yeah, I mean, we don't want to cap anything because we think that everyone can get something out of the experience. And that's important to us. The thing that I think is cool is like when you're a kid, you learn how to ride a bike and like that's your kind of first taste of independence, like the first time you ride away from your parent on your own. And I kind of see that in the warehouse, like the parents will drop their kids off and they're on their own to volunteer with us. And, you know, they come a few times and then the next thing you know, they're walking in. They might not even talk to us. They go to the shop, they get the tools they need, and they're working independently until they have a problem and then they ask.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
So yeah, that independence that they're getting in the warehouses, that's pretty neat.
Well, and that too is a marketable skill, you know, independent thinking and being able to problem solve on your own. That's great. So as a shameless plug, Brook Hill United Methodist Church in Frederick, Maryland is doing a bike collection on March 25th. From 9 to 1. And my question to you two is, how do you rate a successful collection? What would you say sums it up for you to make it worth it to bring a transport out to provide all of the marketing that you do and all that? How do you rate a successful collection?
You know, the easiest answer to that is numbers, but it's not really a great answer.
Okay.
You know, we like to see between 50 and 100 bikes at every collection. The better quality, the better it is for us. And usually that comes through a collection like yours rather than something that's discarded in a landfill. But I would say like the best rate of success, like how to rate that is the project sustainable? I mean, it's the same way that we determine whether or not a project is good overseas. Is that project sustainable? Will the bikes be used? Will they continue to be used? Mm-hmm. Will this collection continue to live beyond 1 year? Like we want to see it happen year after year after year. It also needs to support itself. Like, can you raise enough money so that the, you know, the rental of the truck, the gas that we put in it, like, is that cost covered through the, you know, we ask for a $10 donation with every bike. And so if we're getting that, we're covering our costs, you have a great experience and you want to come back and do it again next year. That's how I would say, yeah, that's a successful collection.
Okay. Awesome. Taylor, do you have anything to add?
No, I would agree. I mean, I think that, yeah, it's really easy to look at the numbers as a successful metric, but I think if that's right, you know, long-term sustainability, I think is also really, is really important. Mm-hmm. And more bikes is great, but the other thing she touched on is quality. You know, like I'd rather have fewer bikes that are, you know, more appropriate for our uses. And, you know, as opposed to getting 300 bikes, but, you know, a third of them are basically just good for stripping parts off of or getting to metal recycling. So that said, I mean, we'll generally take the good with the bad, you know, or the bad with the good, as it were, you know, because again, like there are the good, we can dispose of stuff as sustainable of a fashion as we can. Whereas, you know, hey, sending a bike just straight to the landfill, obviously not great because A, it might still have usable life. If it doesn't have usable life as a complete bike, it might have parts that are usable. Mm-hmm. And it's really important for us to be able to harvest parts to send our partners because that's what sustains their program, not just bikes. You know, you need service parts, replacement parts, etc. And then, yeah, we can recycle stuff. Like we have facilities locally to recycle steel, aluminum, rubber, electronics, etc. So I'd rather it come to us. And it's like, if you know, if it needs to go to metal recycling, so be it. Now, granted, if someone shows up with a bike that looks like they had it in a vat of battery acid for the past 20 years, sitting in a barn for 40 years and it's covered in vines, yeah, I might direct the person, hey, can you do us a favor and you can take this to metal recycling? But yeah, I mean, I think success is like, if it's a good, yeah, is it sustainable? Like, is there a decent number of bikes? Is it something that the organization who's hosting the collection feels like is successful too, in terms of the outreach that you've done, the people in your mm-hmm. kind of in your orbit who are involved in the collection? Like, do they feel like it's, you know, the time that they've invested, is that seem like it's been worthwhile? I think that's okay. Also something to consider. I mean, granted, mm-hmm. that's from your end, or the right. You know, the church's end, that's really up for y'all to decide. But yeah
okay, great. So just as a note for anyone who might be listening to this that has no idea about a bike collection or Bikes for the World, what exactly do you accept and what are things that you can't accept at this point?
I mean, I think the way that I like to try and put it is, if it's a bike part, mostly anything bike related, we can find a home for it.
Okay. So adult
is that
bikes.
Accurate of that?
Yeah. I mean, we don't accept a child's tricycle, but we would accept right. an adult tricycle. We don't accept scooters. Mm-hmm. It is worth mentioning, especially in your area, we also accept portable sewing machines. Mm-hmm. We tend to get a lot up that way. So I definitely want to get that shout out to let people know that we do accept those, and they're important to our projects as well.
But you prefer metal sewing machines, correct?
I mean, we've had both.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Both are fine. You know, the manual ones or the electronic ones. You know, sewing machines that are built into a desk, less ideal, but you know, we can make it work if somebody has one of those that they would like to donate. And you know, we have programs where a sewing machine is a, you know, is an important part of their local program. So
okay,
great.
Hand tools, yeah. As well, correct?
Like, yep,
wrenches, screwdrivers, hammers,
yep.
Those kinds
yeah.
of things,
yeah.
Because what yeah, I'm seeing fine. Is we
I
have
mean,
a
I
lot
think,
of folks. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think tools are generally okay.
What I'm seeing is a lot of folks around here in particular are at the point of cleaning out their parents' houses. And a lot of times, you know, tools never die. They just get passed down. And sometimes you get too many. And so it might be an opportunity for someone to donate some tools as well, if that's something that you would take. I know you all have specialized tools that we use during the collection, particularly get those daggone pedals off. So, mm-hmm. as we're processing
right.
bikes and things. So, all right. So how is Bikes for the World predominantly funded? And then as a local church, how can we best support you?
I guess I'm answering this one. I mean, the significant part of our funding, the majority of it is small donor giving.
Okay.
We do have some grant funding. But yeah, the overwhelming majority is small donor giving. So,
okay.
You know, contributions that individuals make when they donate a bike at a collection event, like what y'all are hosting, or mm-hmm. if they come to the warehouse to donate, or, you know, whatever, that's really important. The way we like to frame it is that, you know, a $10 contribution in conjunction with a bike helps to defray the costs of us getting the bike from the point of donation to the partner program for whom that bike is going to make an impact. The reality is that the per bike cost of getting them from point A to point B is far more than $10. That's what we like to, you know, it's kind of an easy suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
And we can do, you know, if folks want to make a cash contribution or check or online. You know, we're trying to modernize the times. We can take contributions at collections electronically, credit card, all that stuff. So,
okay.
Yeah. All right. So that's a big part that's a big part of our kind of operating budget is just from individual contributions.
Okay. So getting the word out about you all and doing annual collections if we can, and supporting the community in this way, those are the best ways. Plus, you have quite a volunteer pool. I assume you, if there's only three of you that are full time, that's a pretty low overhead or very, what do you call it? Right. Efficient leadership team. There you go. So,
I was just going to say, I think we like to try and think of it as it's pretty lean operation. I mean,
that was the word.
There's not a whole lot to trim. There's not a whole lot of excess here. So
there you go. Yeah. All right. So Taylor, I understand you're getting ready to visit some of the partner sites in around the world. Could you talk a little bit about that?
That is true. Yes, I am in about 2.5 weeks, going to West Africa to visit Village Bicycle Project, which has been a longtime partner of Bikes for the World. They have a program in both Ghana and Sierra Leone. So I'll be in both of those places. And yeah, it's just an opportunity to, it's really an opportunity for me. That is not a partner that I visited. So it's opportunity for me to see firsthand what their operation is like on the ground, but also to learn and try to understand what we can do better, or what we can do to most effectively support the program. Mm-hmm. We want, again, you touched on it, we're a small team, so we want to be very intentional and mm-hmm. the work that we're doing, and, economies of effort, right? So we want to make sure that the effort we're putting in is making the biggest impact possible with our partners. So, I think a lot of it is just information gathering, mm-hmm. kind of learning and seeing, especially understanding how things have changed, right? Like things change over time, and especially in the past couple of years, what has changed, mm-hmm. because of COVID? Is there, right. Is there different, is VBP serving different population? Is there more people who are interested in receiving training through their program to be an individual, bike repairer or run a bike shop, or, mm-hmm. Be someone who's selling bikes? Is there a change there? And then also to understand what, if any, positive impact having access to a bike made for people during, the height of the pandemic. We know that there are things like access to public transportation was really difficult in a lot mm-hmm. of places. Public transportation was cut, curtailed. We saw, so for instance, in Sierra Leone, where I'll also be, we know from previous Ebola outbreaks there that people who had access to a bike were able to continue getting places mm-hmm. as much as closures would allow, because no one wanted to ride public transportation.
Right.
And those are the kind of things that it's like we anecdotally, we know, and we do have data on it, but to see that firsthand, to see and talk to students or educators, school administrators, to understand mm-hmm. like, hey, we know from feedback we get from students that and their families that, hey, having access to a bike, especially for young girls in West Africa, they're getting to and from school, they're staying in school, they're getting an education. But I'm interested to have to kind of see the other side of it. Like, what do teachers say? What do mm-hmm. school administrators say? Like, do they see the positive impact of kids being able to regularly be at school, et cetera? Mm-hmm. These are all the kind of things that I think are really interesting to us. And so it's an opportunity to have the face-to-face interactions and see that stuff on the ground. So in Ghana, will be in and around Accra for a few days, going up north of the city to a couple communities where VBP has is working, and then in Sierra Leone, same, be in the north central part of the country for, you know, 2 or 3 days, and yeah, kind of seeing that there. And I think it'll be good because the trip is also in conjunction with another organization that we work with that is called Recycle, which are they're based in the UK, and mm-hmm. it's a very similar in terms of what we do. It's basically the same thing. So we do have some partners in common that we both ship to, and Village Bicycle Project is one of them. So, you know, traveling with the folks from Recycle, I think will be interesting just to have, you know, have different perspectives. And like we talk about, we want to have opportunities to learn from each other for mm-hmm. volunteers. I think that, you know, that'll be important for me too, learn okay. from, you know, other peer organizations.
All so, right.
I think it's important to note, jumping off of what Taylor was just talking about, we do partner with other nonprofits on the other end. And the reason, one of the reasons that's so important is, like he said, we're not just helping like a single community. They're immersed in their country. And so, mm-hmm. you know, like in Costa Rica or Ghana, the bikes are going to one central location, but then they're going out further. So they're going to all the communities and really having a broad impact across the country. They're also, we're making sure that the bikes are being repaired. They're getting out to the people who we say they're going to. They're really making an impact, and we're able to follow up with that partner and make sure that that is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Also, during the pandemic, you know, everything kind of stopped. Like, we actually had to stop collecting bikes because we didn't have any more room in the warehouse because we couldn't get shipments out. Mm-hmm. We couldn't get them out here. They couldn't accept them overseas. Like, you know, the world stopped.
Yeah.
But the bike program didn't, because we had bikes on the ground in these countries, and the partners were there, and they were able to work with what they had
mm-hmm.
and kind of pivoted with the project. And, you know, sometimes they were helping, you know, workers get to work when the transportation stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Well, let me just ask you, I know that usually as you get close to a collection, we know where the bikes are going. Do we have any idea where ours might be going when we make this collection on March 25th?
Yes. So we have the week before your collection, we have a shipment that's going to go out to Costa Rica.
Mm-hmm.
I know. I think the next shipment after your collection is probably going to go to Madagascar. I would say
okay.
either Madagascar or Rwanda. It's probably one of those two places. So a lot of that, we're at the mercy of what's available to us.
Right.
another thing that's gotten extremely difficult since 2020.
Right.
Used to be a lot easier to say, yeah, we know where stuff is going to go because you could book stuff on short order. Now, not so much, but
gotcha.
Yeah, based on what communication I have and tentative planning with our partners. I think either Madagascar or Rwanda are probably okay. where hopefully the last shipment in March goes out.
Africa.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
East Africa. So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
Also, you talked about partners in these other countries, and I just wanted to do a shout out here to our local partners here that are going to be helping with our collection, and that is the Carroll County Rotary Club, which is a group that does their own collections every year. They've been faithful partners to Bikes for the World, and we are so pleased to be working with them. They're going to help us to sort of educate our folks on how to process things. We're absolutely happy to work with us, and we're going to return the favor when they do their collection a month later. And also Gravel and Grind, which is a local bike shop, coffee shop in downtown Frederick. And they're new partners, but every now and then they'll have someone who comes in and wants a new bike and not sure what to do with their old one. And so it's a donation opportunity that way too. We're also working with Hood College, and some of the students there, and our local Boy Scout troop that meets here at Brook Hill. And so hopefully we're going to have a lot of hands-on, a lot of opportunities for folks to just give back in a small way to help with this particular effort to make a difference in the world. And, you know, that's kind of what it's all about. To not necessarily be as self-centered as a lot of times we can be, but to be focused on others. And so I appreciate you all partnering with us. I appreciate this opportunity to make an impact across the world. Do either of you have any closing thoughts for today? Anything that you would want us to remember about this, or like a nugget that you would want us to take with us about this, the worldwide impact of this program? And continuing into the future.
I would just say it was surprising to me when I first got involved with the organization. Like, I thought it was just all about bikes, and it's really not. It's about lasting change. And, you know, one bike can change 4, 5, 6 people's lives. You know, some of the bikes are being resold in the countries that we're donating them, and that's helping build their economies. It's creating jobs. So it's not just about transportation and that one bike changing one person's life. It's about changing their family's life. It's about changing the community. It's about, you know, impacting on a bigger scale than just, you know, transportation.
All right.
Taylor? Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think that it's my big takeaway, and what I like to point out is that a bike is such a really simple item, tool, machine, but it can have such a hugely fundamentally positive impact in people's lives and on their family, their community, whatever. And like Yvette said, there's a lot of different threads that connect all of that together. And so yeah, it's not just about bikes. It's about the impact and the lasting impact and the connections that makes. You know, Yvette and I have both visited partners and seen and interacted with people who have bikes that said, hey, this is a bike that I got that came from a Bikes for the World shipment 6 years ago. Mm. My family's still using it. Okay. So you know, and just to have the, just to think like, okay, if I got a bike, if someone gave me a bike today, what are all the things that I could accomplish by using that bike in the next 6 years? It's like the possibilities are endless.
Mm-hmm.
So,
all right.
Yeah. Bike is really simple, but it can have a huge impact in people's lives. So
awesome. Well, I just wanted to extend my sincerest thanks to both of you for joining me today, but also for the work that you do. Once again, this is Yvette Hess, the Outreach Coordinator, and Taylor Jones, the Executive Director of Bikes for the World. Please tell me I got those titles right. I hope I did. So, all right.
Yep.
I am Reverend Kathy Altman of Brook Hill United Methodist Church, and we are thrilled to be partnering with Bikes for the World from here on out. So thank you both so much. I appreciate awesome. Your time and your talents and all that you do to make such an impact in our world. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you, Taylor and Yvette, for your insights and for all this wonderful information that we've obtained concerning Bikes for the World. I encourage you, if you are able to come out to a bicycle collection. If you check out bikesfortheworld.org, you will see all the various locations where collections are being hosted, ours included, here at Brook Hill United Methodist Church. Our collection will occur on March 24th and 25th, and so you can gather that information again on the bikesfortheworld.org website. Take care, God bless, and thank you for joining us today.